Welcome to Cypherpunk Notes, where we explore digital privacy and sovereignty, not just the how, but the why. Whether you're just starting to question big tech or you're ready to encrypt everything, this is your guide to taking back control of your digital life. June 2013. A 29-year-old NSA contractor walks out of a secure facility in Hawaii with the most explosive intelligence leak in American history. Within weeks, the world would learn that their governments weren't just capable of mass surveillance. They were doing it to everyone, all the time. Today, what Edward Snowden actually revealed, why it still matters over a decade later, and what it means for you. The Snowden revelations changed everything, not because they told us something we didn't suspect, but because they proved it, with documents, with code names, with PowerPoint slides from the surveillance state itself. Let's talk about what those documents actually said. Before 2013, if you said, "The government is recording all our phone calls and emails," people would call you a conspiracy theorist. Privacy advocates warned about mass surveillance for years. The cypherpunks we talked about in episode 1 saw it coming in the 1990s. But without proof, it was easy to dismiss. Why would they bother with my emails? I'm nobody. There are too many people. They can't possibly track everyone. If they were doing that, someone would have leaked it by now. And then someone did. What Snowden revealed wasn't a surveillance program. It was a surveillance infrastructure, a global architecture designed to capture, store, and search the digital lives of billions of people, including American citizens, supposedly protected by the Fourth Amendment. This wasn't about catching terrorists. This was about collecting everything on the assumption that it might someday be useful. Let's start with the program that got the most attention. PRISM. PRISM was an NSA program that collected data directly from the servers of major American tech companies, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Apple, Yahoo, and others. These companies initially denied participation. Later, we learned the truth was more nuanced but no less disturbing. The NSA had legal mechanisms to compel these companies to hand over user data, and the companies had built systems to facilitate this. If you used Gmail, the NSA could access your emails. If you used Facebook, your messages. If you stored files on iCloud, those too. And you were never notified. You couldn't challenge it in court. The companies were legally prohibited from even acknowledging it existed. PRISM got the headlines, but upstream collection was arguably more invasive. The NSA tapped the actual fiber optic cables that carry internet traffic. They installed equipment at major internet exchange points, the physical locations where internet providers connect to each other. This meant they weren't just getting data from cooperating tech companies. They were capturing all data flowing through those cables, including traffic from companies that never agreed to cooperate. An internal NSA presentation boasted of collecting it all. They meant it. Then there's XKeyscore, the NSA's search engine for surveillance data. An analyst with XKeyscore access could search through the NSA's vast database of intercepted communications. Email content, chat logs, browsing history, metadata showing who contacted whom, when, and where. According to leaked documents, an analyst could query by email address, phone number, name, or even search terms used in browsing sessions. With minimal oversight, one NSA training document stated that XKeyscore covered nearly everything a typical user does on the internet. When these programs were exposed, defenders tried a rhetorical trick. We're not reading your emails, we're just collecting metadata. Metadata means the data about data. Not the content of your phone call, but who you called, when, for how long, and from where. This sounds benign, it isn't. As former NSA Director Michael Hayden admitted, we kill people based on metadata. Metadata reveals patterns. If you call a suicide hotline at 2 a.m., they know something's wrong even without hearing the conversation. If you call a divorce lawyer, then a real estate agent, then a moving company, they know what's happening. If a journalist calls the White House, then immediately calls a source on a story about the White House, they can connect those dots. Metadata is often more revealing than content, and the NSA was collecting it on essentially everyone. Snowden also revealed that the NSA wasn't just operating domestically. Program Muscular, run jointly with Britain's GCHQ, tapped the private fiber optic links connecting Google and Yahoo data centers around the world. This was happening without the company's knowledge. The NSA was essentially breaking into their internal networks, and through agreements like Five Eyes, an intelligence sharing alliance between the US, UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Surveillance could be conducted on each other's citizens and then shared, sidestepping domestic legal restrictions. An American's data collected by GCHQ could be handed to the NSA. A Brit's data collected by the NSA could go to GCHQ. Everyone was spying on everyone and sharing the results. Some people say Snowden was over a decade ago. Things have changed. Have they? The surveillance infrastructure wasn't dismantled. Some programs were reformed, barely. Others were simply renamed or moved to different legal authorities. Section 702 of FISA, the legal backbone for programs like PRISM, has been reauthorized repeatedly, most recently in 2024. The NSA's collection capabilities have only grown more sophisticated. Meanwhile, private surveillance has exploded. The data broker industry, companies that buy and sell your personal information, didn't exist at this scale in 2013. Now it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and law enforcement regularly buys this data to bypass warrant requirements. What Snowden revealed wasn't a bug to be fixed. It was the system working as designed, a system that assumes privacy is obsolete, that collection should be comprehensive, that everyone is a potential suspect. The question isn't whether surveillance has continued, it's whether we've done anything meaningful to protect ourselves. So what does this mean for you? First, assume you're being collected, not because you're important, but because collection is cheap and everyone is being collected. The question is whether that data will ever be searched or used against you. Second, understand the difference between security and privacy. HTTPS protects your data from hackers. It doesn't protect your metadata from your ISP or the NSA. Encryption helps, but only if you control both ends. Third, learn who your adversaries actually are. For most people, it's not the NSA specifically. It's the data broker who sells your location history, the social media company that profiles your psychology, the future employer who Googles you. Your threat model matters. The Snowden revelations aren't just history, they're a window into how power thinks about your data, and the tools to fight back exist. We'll cover them in future episodes. That's it for today. If you want to go deeper, Glenn Greenwald's book, No Place to Hide, and Edward Snowden's memoir, Permanent Record, provide the most thorough accounts of what he revealed and what it means. Next episode, we talk about the private side of surveillance, how you became the product, and how free services really get paid. Until then, stay private, stay sovereign. Learn more at cypherpunkschool.com. This has been Cypherpunk Notes.